Good evening.
No, we'll do it live! Fuck it!
Ooh, hopefully I can sync it up later. Dogs, don't trip over him. Damn it, dog. Hold on, you stupid bubble. That's the damn power cord of my laptop. So anyways, everybody, you're probably listening to the show here. I don't know. I'm tired as hell. Yeah, I'm really exhausted.
Why?
Let's see. Everybody, welcome to the show, halfcarded.com, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yesterday I'm working another, pretty much the same gigs I usually do. So I woke up at 5:30, drove down to the office, was there from 6:30 until 1, no, till 12, I think. Then I drove from Chicago to Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is about a 3-hour drive, 2.5-hour drive, where I saw the legend himself, Mishka Shubali. He and I hung out. We bumped together. We slept together, everybody. He's a tender lover. I saw him play his show there, and then I woke up this morning at 6 o'clock, 6:30 Eastern time, which I think is actually 5:30 my time, drove straight back to Chicago, right to the office, and was back in the office by 9 o'clock, worked a full day, had to drive home in rush hour, which sucks, and
Are you working for yourself now, or are you working for, like a company, or what do you do? When you say you go to the office.
Oh, I take on, because my normal office is here at my home.
Right.
With my business cards and everything, which say lawyer on them. They don't say attorney at law. They just say lawyer. And it really pisses my mother off. She thinks it sounds unprofessional. I think that it just doesn't sound as pretentious. Anyways, no, what happens is you can get these. This is basically the lawyer equivalent of a temporary gig. It's like temp work. So they're always in the same, especially this one company that tends to hire me a lot. It's always in the same office. And this one's really great because, like, nobody's supervising me, which is wonderful. So I just get in there, and I mean, this should take 8 hours. It's like 3 hours later, I'm done. I'm like, well, I'm going to fuck around on the internet for a while. You can always kind of tell, like, I'll have more writing done. I'll have more bullshit that I pulled from UFC's YouTube page and I'm using just to pretend like we have content. And coming soon, as we introduce to the site, everybody be very excited. North Korea news is coming.
There's not a lot of competition there, right?
28 websites. Interesting. It's not even an internet. It's an intranet, really.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So that's so great. Anyways, everybody, we'll shoot for an hour. If we go a little over, that's fine. But Matt's in total control, as always. And I'm watching a dog eat actually a piece of paper that was instructions from the Seventh Circuit District Court here in Chicago from one of the judges' local rules. I don't need it anymore, but it's kind of funny to watch him eat some pretentious judges' rules on how they expected you to behave in court.
All right, so I'm thinking about we'll do the usual drill here. We'll hit up last week, come to this week, and then talk about this upcoming weekend. This past weekend, there were two minor shows, I guess you would call them. There was a UFC Fight Night on Saturday night from Hidalgo, Texas. I'm going to say that was the first UFC show from that city at the State Farm Arena. Not a lot of major news from this show. In the main event, Michael Johnson beat Dustin Poirier by KO at 135 of the first round. This was a mild upset, I would say. I had picked Poirier, and he was the betting favorite going in. Johnson just looked a little quicker, a little crisper, and landed a couple, like a quick 1-2 on the feet, and Poirier went down, and Johnson swarmed on top of him and finished the fight pretty quick. Pretty impressive performance by Johnson, but he's one of those guys that are really, really inconsistent. Sometimes he looks great, like a world beater, and other times You know, Nate Diaz dominates him for three rounds. So it'll be interesting to see where both guys go after that one.
Yeah, I thought that this was, I mean, this was the Michael Johnson that had been tearing it up at lightweight. Probably the best performance of his career by far. He looked on a, athletically, he looked on a different level than Poirier. He was just quicker and stronger. His fast twitch muscles seemed to be working better. Just watching the two of them, I'm like, every time these two were ever fight, Johnson would just destroy Poirier if this is how this always plays out. A huge win, and it was really impressive.
Yeah, he, I mean, Johnson's weird because, I mean, on his resume, he's got wins over Tony Ferguson, Edson Barboza, Joe Lauzon. Like really solid, you know?
I mean, Barboza and Ferguson are arguably the, you know, top two contenders at lightweight.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's weird, but then he lost to, like, Reza Madadi and Jonathan Brookins and Paul Sass and just guys, like, not at that level. He's a weird fighter. When he's on, and when he's not on, he can lose to, you know, a low ranked
an Englishman that only knows how to do triangles.
Yeah, actually, Sass won that fight by heel hook.
Oh, fun well, fact. That's even worse. You don't even get beat by the guy's specialty.
Very true. So, I mean, Johnson, I don't think he's really in the mix per se, but a couple more wins, he could be in line for a shot. For Poirier, a major setback, but. You can't win them all.
To me, Johnson, the phrase in the mix, I really think the way just the, everything's stacked up right now with is Conor in there? Is Nate in the division? What's going on? Like, right. Is Khabib going to fight? There's so many guys that he's probably 3 years away from a title shot. Just because he'd have to win that many fights and have no losses and right time, right place because he's not really going to be a big draw or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it depends who he gets too, you know what I mean? Somebody gets hurt and he's talking, he wants big money fights, and maybe somebody gets hurt, he gets a short notice fight and can get in there. You never know, you know? That's what kind of makes this fun. In the co-main, Derek Brunson beat Uriah Hall via TKO at 141 of the first round. I kind of had mixed feelings on this one. I thought it was a little bit of an early stoppage. Brunson knocked Hall down and then had him kind of up against the cage. It was a good shot. He definitely rocked him. But Hall wasn't out, and he was up pretty quick after the stoppage, complaining. He definitely didn't look out of it. But I'd rather have him play it safe than have him take unnecessary shots at the same time. So obviously it's a judgment call, split second thing, but I would have been okay with it going on a couple seconds longer.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, it's Uriah Hall, and I not that like he's got this long history of taking a lot of horrible knockouts and I want to protect him, more just the dude's so inconsistent that if he loses close, like if it's, you know, maybe a little iffy, screw him. You know, he hasn't earned the goodwill to me to show me that he would rally back and win a fight. So, and Brunson dropped him hard, and it was a mild surprise, and we'll all forget this fight ever happened until one of them fights again. We go, oh, yeah, just like how I remember that in my mind, Uriah Hall's last fight was beating Gegard Mousasi. I'm like, oh, wait, no. He'd fought and lost in between then, so such is life.
Yeah, Brunson's on a bit of a run. I think he's won four or five straight. He's talking like he wants a title shot, but he's still way back in the line there. He might be further away than Michael Johnson even. Who knows? Prior to that, there was Evan Dunham defeating Rick Glenn via unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three scorecards. Dunham Glenn typically fights at 145, I believe, so he was moving up in weight, took this fight short notice. Glenn's been around for a while between, you know, WSOF and some other, you know, upper, upper minor leagues, I guess you could call him. But he looked good. It was an exciting fight. He hung in there, but Dunham was just a little probably too experienced, has fought better guys during his career, and was probably just a little bit too big, and Glenn didn't have a full camp.
Yeah, the third round in particular was really exciting, and a lot of that I think goes to Glenn's credit, because he would just throw his... I mean, he did the whole, like, I'll hold my hands out, come on, let's go. And for the first time, when somebody did that, he just got popped over and over again. I'm like, all right, dude, you're making your point, but usually you do that from, like, 5 feet away, so the guy can't just immediately be like, all right, I'm going to punch you in the face. But they had a slobber knocker of a fight. They both fought really, really hard. I thought by far the best fight of the night overall. Glenn moving up in weight, and he has a style that's similar. We talked about it last week, and it pretty much went how we both kind of expected, which is Evan Dunham's just a bigger, more technical version of what Rick Glenn is. And Glenn showed a lot of heart, but you also saw he got taken down very easily at times, and the power wasn't there. And he showed heart and a chin, and he'll be back, and he'll fight at 45, and I don't have a fucking clue who he'll fight, but for coming on short notice against a guy like Dunham, who's kind of one of those top 15-ish talents, good on Rick Glenn, and good on Dunham for sticking with it and beating a guy who can mentally break, I think, other fighters, but Dunham's the kind of guy that doesn't get mentally broken.
Sure. Rounding out the card was Rowan Carnero defeating Kenny Robertson, split decision. Islam Makhachev defeating Chris Wade. Then probably one of the more exciting fights, 19-second fights you'll ever see. Chaz Skelly defeated Maximo Blanco with like a, I don't know what you want to call it, like a running sidekick boot sort of thing. And then rocked him immediately with that, just ran out to start the fight. And then I think it was a Darce.
It was an anaconda? It was an anaconda. Okay. The way that he's moving, Darce would go the other way, basically. But I mean, he charged at him and kicked him like Gerard Butler in a 300. Like, he's going to basically knock him down a well, jumped on, grabbed the anaconda. I don't know if it was the fastest submission ever or the fastest submission ever at featherweight or something like that.
Yeah, fastest at featherweight, I think, is what it was.
Which is kind of unfair because he didn't tap him. He choked him unconscious in 19 seconds. Like, that's really, really impressive. And
And for most people, it would have probably been like a 14-second fight.
For what he did, to dive on a guillotine and immediately recognize he didn't have it and switch to the Darce. I'm sorry, to the anaconda, even though they're all the same. A Darce and anaconda, the same principle. They're all just a variation of an arm triangle. I think that chaining like that so quickly obviously caught Blanco off guard. And when you're right away, first 20 seconds of a fight, no sweat, that's time to try that. And good on Chaz Skelly. He was... He saved a card for a long time because most of the rest of this thing sucked.
I didn't even see most of the rest of it. For whatever reason, Comcast, my DVR, did not record that show, most of it. But
That's because the first 10 minutes or 20 minutes of the show didn't air because the baseball... I think it was a Sox game or whatever.
That wasn't it. I got home from work and it just wasn't recording at all for whatever reason.
You missed basically nothing.
I've got a cable box issue. Something's going on there. But there was also a Bellator show the Friday night prior, September 16th, on Spike, also in Texas, this time from Cedar Park. In the main event, Czech Congo beat Tony Johnson via majority decision. We'll move along. Joe Warren defeated Sirwan Kakai via submission. It was a guillotine in the third round. And then also Anastasia Yankova defeated Veta Ortega via split decision in a fight where neither looked very skilled on the feet, and the whole thing took place on the feet.
Yeah, that one was...
That was a rough fight.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because... Like, when you look at, I mean, the glamour shots that Anastasia puts out, and she puts them out, she looks really, really beautiful. But in, like, the cage, she doesn't have that same appearance. Whereas, like, a Gina Carano, she would look still attractive while inside of a cage. She just had a face. Even Paige Van Zandt has an appeal. I thought Anastasia just looked completely different. Just thicker and heavier and just not as pretty. And when your gimmick is that you're a pretty Russian chick, who the new joke is going to be that Bellator bought her off of a dating website. That's why I decided to go with old Anastasia there. So I think that obviously they thought they had something great with her. I don't think that they have what they thought, which was their chance at a Paige Van Zandt type.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell, but she did not look impressive in that fight at all. I swear I heard the announcers say, I don't know if it was Sean Grande or who it was, but I thought they said she'd only been training like 18 months or something. I'm like, oh, that this is set up for Yankova to walk through her, and then it was very competitive. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, they can keep feeding her cans indefinitely. I mean, it's Bellator, it's not UFC. They can get away with that sort of thing there.
She may have a Muay Thai background this longer. She may have only been training MMA for 18 months.
Okay.
But,
okay.
I mean, in this thing, it's Muay Thai. Male Muay Thai, everybody's a champion. Female Muay Thai, it's even worse. So, who cares? That's all I can say. All I can say is, who cares?
That was not their best show ever. Let's move into some new stuff. Also announced on that Bellator show was the signing of one Chael Sonnen. He made his first appearance for Bellator. I think it was some sort of satellite feed where they were interviewing him, and he'd have some, you know, basically cutting pro wrestling promos from the 80s. So there's some weird things with this Sonnen signing. One, there's no opponent for him signed yet and no fight yet announced, but they had all this hoopla for his impending debut, which we still don't know when it is. Thoughts on who he might fight? He's mentioned five people so far that he'd be interested in fighting. You've got Tito Ortiz, Quinton Jackson, Rory McDonald, Fedor Emelianenko, and Wanderlei Silva. Quite the array of characters there. Any thoughts on a potential first fight for Sonnen? Who you think he might fight?
Well, first of all, I just have to say, I thought his promo was just, and I hate pretending to be offended or anything, but when he went out there and cuts a promo about how, like, I know everybody's giving me these heartfelt, you know, appeals, and I feel your love and blah, 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 and I don't care about any of it. I'm like, dude, your infant daughter died. And I am one for dark humor, but this wasn't even like humor. It was an attempt to get heat or something. It's something like, again, that somebody says like what a Von Erich would do. It's like, you know, WWE scripting now, Reed Flair died of heroin or whatever. It's just like, I'm like, God. But again, everybody deals with things in their own way, so such is life.
It's weird because I wouldn't be comfortable doing it, but at the same time, should we be judging him for doing it? It's like, I don't know. It seemed a little heartless and something I would not be comfortable going on TV and kind of mocking, like 2 weeks from when my newborn died.
I think a lot of it's just.
And the other thing is, it didn't really make any waves or help promote the fight or help him make more money, or it's not going to increase buys or draw people to the arena. So I didn't see the purpose behind it. I'm okay with it. And it's from watching wrestling, pro wrestling my whole life, but I'm okay with it if it'll bring people in and help you make money, but it was just kind of senseless.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it just, it's because it's Chael and everything he does is always so, you know, that's why I always liked his promos, is that there was a bit of a good-natured kind of, like, always a little bit of a humor behind what he says. Like, hey, do you remember the part where I said that they fed the horse, the bus a carrot? Like, he'd be making these outrageous claims. It's like, okay, but he's not really racist. Like, he's just saying funny, dumb things. It's like, but this one wasn't like, I don't know. It was just kind of awkward. And like, is he the bad guy? Like, is he a heel? Like, is that what he's going? I don't know. Like, are you going to go heel by saying you don't care that your daughter died? I don't know what it was. But anyway, as for who he should fight, I think Tito said he would do it. I mean, Tito fight anyone. By far, the most logical one of all would be Wanderlei Silva. They've got the history. They've got a build. Sure. They're both of the same weight class. And it's actually a fight I'd be interested in seeing. I don't want to see him fight most other guys. One guy I could see him facing would be interesting would be King Mo, just because Mo's always in that middleweight to light heavyweight to heavyweight, even though Mo says he wants to fight Shane Carwin for whatever fucking reason. But yeah, I mean, I could see King Mo. I think that he and Chael would think, hey, we can cut a bunch of pro wrestling promos on each other. And it would be awful because King Mo is really bad at promos. Like, for some guy that supposedly loves pro wrestling, he sucks at it. So, it's Wanderlei Silva. That's just, unless you can't make it due to athletic commission reasons, not making that fight is stupid. It's pure money, and it might be the biggest fight in Bellator history. So just do it.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, is Wanderlei even signed to Bellator? Obviously, he's got the Ryzen deal, but there's never been mention of him signing with Bellator, technically, I don't believe, right?
That's true. I don't know. I assume that they're all signed to something. To me, look at this way. In my world, you're either in the UFC or you're not. It's like if you're not in the UFC, you're available to Bellator. Like, nobody's signing with a major promotion that Bellator basically can't get the guys to fight from it. Like, ONE FC, I don't know, they got, like, Ben Askren and, like, I don't know, maybe two other people or some shit like that. They're not keeping people from Bellator. Bellator really wants someone, they're going to get them. And same with Ryzen. Ryzen definitely doesn't have exclusive contracts, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some sort of working relationship there based on that tournament they did last year, because King Mo won that journey. I'm sure they could make it work, but it's just interesting that people assume that fight will happen when technically he's not even working for Bellator, technically.
And neither one of them are licensed.
That's a separate
and they both have to go through the licensing process.
Right.
That'd be. I mean, to God, me, can you just imagine those two going to Nevada on the same day to get licensed to fight one another? I would just like, good God, that'd be great. And oh fuck, the UFC would probably show it on Fight Pass.
Probably. I mean, to me, the other one that makes sense too is Tito. I mean, they could do that fight at 205. They're both older guys. They could both promote the fight. And I think Tito will still draw an audience against Chael. Will do the same numbers as Wanderlei? Maybe not, but I think to the casual fan, Tito's probably a bigger name than Wanderlei. So, I'd be okay with the Tito fight too.
Yeah, and Tito did good numbers with Stefan Bonner.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Chael's a significantly bigger star with a much better ability to talk up shit. Chael, nobody's a game changer for Bellator, but there's little things and Bellator is doing all the things that they need to do right. Like, they can't make mistakes, and for the most part, they're keeping guys if they can, and they're signing very good fighters. They're getting, they have credibility with Rory McDonald and Ben Henderson. You throw in Tito, Chael. I mean, Chael's going to bring in eyeballs. That guy, he's somebody you can do a pay-per-view with if you're Bellator. I don't think that they're there, but you put Chael and Wanderlei on TV and it gets promoted right, that's a million and a half, maybe 2 million viewers on Spike. I could see that with a lot of hype.
Absolutely, yeah. As far as I'm still not sure totally how this happened, but what were your thoughts on UFC must have basically just released him, no? I mean, they didn't... He had an interview with Helwani on whatever, the MMA hour that's really 4 hours long. But essentially, he wouldn't really come clean or explain what happened. But he was originally, when he popped for that last, steroid test, that last PED failure, Fox Sports fired him as like a commentator and a play-by-play guy, not a play-by-play guy, but, you know, like an in-studio host. They fired him from that, but UFC never released him back then. So he would have still had at least one fight on his contract because he was scheduled to fight, and that's why he was being tested. So UFC either cut him or just I don't understand why UFC would have let him go, because obviously he's still a name. He could draw, against, Nick Diaz or Bisping or some, He could still be a value to the UFC. You have any thoughts on how that all went down?
The most likely scenario is they released him because he asked for his release, and they just figured he's too radioactive for us to use. And it's not worth it. We don't have any huge money with him, although, honestly, him and Anderson for a third fight would draw.
Absolutely, yeah.
But for all I know, again, I'd have to know the specifics of the contract. He's been out for so long, although contracts would all be told, suspended, while you're serving a drug sentence. I suspect that they just released him and said, best of luck to you. The UFC will do that with guys like this. Like, this isn't Vince McMahon necessarily. I'm going to sneeze soon.
Ooh, good one. Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, remember when they released Krokop and Krokop wanted to come back and Bellator was trying to sign him? Then UFC swooped in and re-signed Krokop because they didn't want him going to Bellator? Like, Sonnen's a bigger draw than Krokop. It just baffled me because they've lost Ben Henderson and Rory McDonald, but they're nowhere. They haven't done a million buy pay per view show like Sonnen has. It just seemed odd.
Yeah, I don't know. It is weird. But again, all I can think is he hasn't fought in years. Who knows? Right. He really probably isn't going to compete at much of a level. The middleweight division has essentially had a complete overturn since he last fought. Like,
sure,
he was at the top of the division back then, and now it's all. I mean, Bisping's a top guy, but Weidman and Rockhold and Jacare, these are all. This is a new generation of middleweights, and
sure,
Sonnen ain't going to compete with them. And again, maybe they just figured they didn't have a place for him.
Yeah, maybe. It just surprises me because it doesn't really seem like their typical, MO. But Sonnen also said this after signing with Bellator. This was kind of interesting. If I was to fail a test under my Bellator contract, talking about a steroid
test. This is all bullshit.
It would cost me 100% of my purse and $500,000. That is in writing in the contract. When Scott Coker was asked about this, he declined comment. You think it's bullshit?
I think that's 100% Chael Sonnen bullshit. That sounds exactly like something he would say. He's like, I read it, I was just surprised it was in there, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that you still agreed to something so onerous, just nobody would in their right mind ever sign such a deal. Like, no, this is just making things up. Just that he's going to get popped for steroids anyway. So,
I was skeptical of that as well.
It's Chael speaking. It's like a 90% right. Chance is a lie.
He probably hasn't even signed with Bellator. All right,
he's pulling up Brian Pillman.
Yeah. Moving along, well, this kind of segues into another person who's been talking a lot. Not as big a name in the world of MMA, but UFC lightweight veteran Al Iaquinta.
Actually, hold on. Because you mentioned Helwani's name, I'll just get out of the way now.
Okay, sure.
I saw Helwani talking. He was very critical of Joe Rogan after Rogan basically, told the truth to everybody there in front of the world at UFC 203 about,
hey, Punk wasn't this kind of stupid, blah, blah, blah. And Helwani was like, he was playing the, well, Joe Rogan's not a fighter, he doesn't know card, blah, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, Joe Rogan's had competed in one national tournaments in Taekwondo, and he is a legitimate black belt in both gi and no gi. He's not a joke or anything like that. He's the most respectful guy there can be. Everyone who's ever rolled with him says he's very legit. And more important than that, that's something that a real reporter would do. They would get in there and try to, like, I mean, Joe Rogan, because I just rewatched the whole presentation to really get a feel for how Rogan came across, and he did not toe the company line at all. You would think that every journalist who thinks you need to be extra critical of the UFC would look at what Rogan did and be like, yes, that's how you should be approaching these things. He wasn't just a spokesperson for the company. He went out there and was very critical. Meanwhile, this is Helwani, Mr. Well, it was journalistic integrity. I had to tell everybody about Brock Lesnar coming back 30 minutes before they would have found out anyways. And it's like, you want it both ways. Like, you're not the arbiter of what's appropriate there, and especially to hide behind the, well, Joe, you're never a fighter. It's like, you don't need to be a fighter to know something's stupid and a bad idea. That's just an ad hominem attack. It has no business being there. I was never a pro wrestler. I can watch Raw and tell you it's really stupid, a lot of the things they do. Like, I don't know why Roman Reigns fell out of a cage before the Kevin Owens on Raw. I don't know why, but I never wrestled, but I have a brain. So anyways, Helwani continues to, actually, it's just a journalist. People that think that whatever they do is the right way to do it, and they're very assured of themselves, and they tend not to be too introspective.
Well, I mean, it gets to the, I think the heart of the issue is the question should be, should UFC announcers be truly honest, or are they there to promote the product? That's the question.
That's fine, except for this is Joe Rogan, who is always honest. Like, that's what I've always loved about Joe, is that matter what, like, he just doesn't care. If you fire him tomorrow, he said he'll just do this fight companion. He'll sit in the studio with Eddie Bravo and Brendan Schaub and just smoke weed and do the fight companions, and people like those anyways. He doesn't need this. He just does it because he loves it. And right. He's got more, I think he's quite possibly one of the most credible television sports announcers there is in any medium. Yep. And, he's not just the guy from Fear Factor anymore. He's really, really good. He's irreplaceable. And, I mean, Jimmy Smith is really great, but Joe Rogan's just at a different level, particularly as a guy who knows and loves the sport so much, but has an entertainment background as a very successful comedian. It's such a perfect combination. And when he's retired, a la Joe Silva, that'll be a sad day.
Absolutely. I was going to touch on this real quick. Ally Aquinta.
Who does not like Joe Silva.
Not a fan. It was announced he was going to fight Thiago Alves at UFC 205 at MSG in New York. But prior to the fight in the last, the last month or so, he tried to renegotiate his contract. But Joe Silva turned him down, or his management down anyway. And apparently Joe Silva dropped some F-bombs and was not real professional when talking to Iaquinta's managers. Iaquinta also claims that he wanted to renegotiate the contract because he would literally make no money if he lost the fight after paying his traveling and training partners and not having sponsors due to the Reebok deal. He claims he would make no money if he lost. He also mentioned that he is ineligible for any fight bonuses in his next three appearances, which is a first that I've ever heard of. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. And he wasn't going to get he was ineligible for these bonuses because he didn't attend a fighters summit a few months back. So he's not happy, and he's saying if he can't renegotiate his deal, he may never fight again.
Yeah, that whole being ineligible for a fighter's bonus thing, that's a first as far as I'm aware. The only time I've ever seen anything like that was when Cerrone got penalized for wearing a tiny little patch on his pants and in violation of the Reebok deal.
Right.
But, I mean, again, it's UFC. They can kind of do what they want. I mean, credit to Al there. This is a heck of a statement to make, because I also think it's a bit of a wake-up call. I don't know if he's married and has kids. I'm going to guess yes.
He doesn't. He does not.
Oh, okay. Gee. Because, you know, he's doing what most people do when they don't have a background in education, like a degree or something. They go into real estate, like housewives. And he's doing well, and he's making a living, and I think he's seeing that, you know, the grind of fighting is really tough, and but all that, I mean, you're a kid from New York, and you had a chance to fight in Madison Square Garden. I know you want to renegotiate. Maybe he just misinterpreted what his drawing power is in the world and thought that they needed him more than he needed them. But I mean, he would be in, I thought that was a really entertaining fight. Jim Miller stepping in, basically a fine replacement, but I mean, maybe it's just because, I mean, I'm only 4 years older than him, although I've become very wise over the last 4 years. It's been a trying 4 years. Just, I don't know, maybe it's because I value experiences a lot more now, but dude, like, you're never going to, the odds are against you ever being a multimillionaire world champion, but to fight in Madison Square Garden, like, most guys would pay you to do that. And, you know, again, it's his deal. Up to him. Such is life.
Yeah. I mean, some guys will do it, some guys won't. And it's hard because part of me says, you know what? It's like any job. If you don't like what you're getting paid, you don't have to do it. Part of me says that, and part of the capitalist thing makes me feel that way. But at the same time, you're talking about the top 1% of fighters in the world or in the UFC. Probably less than that. It's less than 1%. It's probably 0.1% fight for the UFC.
And Punk. Like, and Punk.
Plus CM Punk. They probably should be getting paid a little more, especially based on the sale and everything, for $4 billion and the $160 million a year in profits. Could, you know, another of that $10 million be spread out between the fighters? Yeah, absolutely. And pay them each $10,000 more to show up and fight? Yeah, they could do that. But they don't have to. There's no union. There's no real way for the fighters to stand up and say that until they choose to do so.
And there's more to this, it sounds like. A lot of the story came out that he had, you know, Ia Quinta had needed a knee surgery, and first the UFC wanted to do therapy. When that wasn't working, he wanted the surgery, and they were initially only going to pay for part of it, but eventually they finally paid for all of it. And right. I remember reading when they were asking fighters, like, what are your thoughts on Joe Silva? And, like, almost to a T, like, every one of them was either, you know, I didn't really have a lot of dealings with him, or I love the guy. And Al flat said back then, a couple weeks ago, like, good, I'm glad he's gone. So yeah. They have a contentious relationship, and Joe Silva's he can be a hothead.
I think, like everything, though, there's two sides to it. We're getting Ia Quinta's version, where he even mentioned that there was a doctor he specifically wanted to see, who was like the best whatever knee doctor. I don't know if there's a certain name for knee doctor, but there was a certain guy he wanted to see.
It's orthopedic specialist.
Yeah, and he was gonna, what his fee or whatever for it was double what the UFC normally paid. So the UFC said, we'll pay what we normally pay, and you can pick up the rest. So, I mean, from the company and the promotion and the management, this is what we normally pay for the surgery. You can go to our guy and get it done, or we'll give you the money towards getting it done with your guy. I mean, there's an argument for that. Is it a good one? Maybe, maybe not. But again, it's like,
yeah.
There's always two sides to every story, I guess.
It's an odd situation, and I think that the fact that things like this don't come up very often shows that it's something to just kind of be ignored.
Yeah, or maybe it happens more often and it just never gets out.
Maybe, but there's so many former guys, or like most of the guys are just complaining about being underpaid. That's always happening. You're always having the Paul Felder issue, or you know, Brendan Schaub thinking you know that he was underpaid and that he was losing money from sponsorships and all that stuff. But for the most, again, most guys, they don't have this seem to have that personal thing about it. They all want to get paid more, but on some level, in the back of their mind, they're like, "Eh, well, you know."
The thing with the bonuses seemed a little much. I don't know if you caught the story with that, but essentially, there was a fighter summit, and Aya Quinta contacted the office and said, "Hey, would it be okay if I skipped it? I'm under the weather. I'm sick. I'm 5 weeks out from this fight." And they said, "Yeah, sure, stay home." And then 2 days later, he posted a photo on Instagram or some sort of social media where he was at the beach. And the next day, somebody from the office calls him and says, "Hey, we thought you were sick. You said you were sick. You couldn't make the fighters summit." And then he was pissed because it's like they're checking up on him, and he lives 5 minutes from the beach. And he claims he was taking a break in between training sessions and just went down to the beach for a little bit. But again, there's the two sides. From the UFC's perspective, you're saying you're too sick to fly out to Vegas for this thing you're required to do, and then you're at the beach the next day. From a management perspective, it's like, what are you doing if you're sick? Be home and take care of yourself and get better. That's okay. Stay home, but don't go to the fucking beach.
I wonder if Connor was ineligible.
I don't know. I don't. But again, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Usually in these he said she said sort of things, the truth is usually in the middle. Yeah. But either way, Aya Quinta's off the show. He's not happy. And he's talking like he may never fight again, which would be a bummer because, I mean, he was a solid lightweight with some potential, and he's only 29. So we'll see what happens. What else is going on? Sage Northcutt versus Mickey Gall.
Hair versus hair.
Is not signed yet, but I want to see this fight badly. Sage and Gall have both been kind of cutting promos on each other. Sage is making fun of Gall's hair, saying it needs more gel in it. It should be spiked up more. Gall decided to respond by demanding Sage fight him in a hair versus hair match, which is brilliant. I love Sage Northcutt trying to talk trash. I like Mickey Gall saying they should do a hair versus hair match. I like that they're both young. They both have names, but they're not the most experienced guys. And I think by the time this fight gets signed and it comes around, I'm not going to say it's going to be a huge deal and break records, but for two guys with a handful of fights in the UFC, this will be a pretty big fight.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what all these, newer guys need to do. Like, this is your old school classic pro wrestling undercard feud. The two guys who are on the same level. They have kind of a dumb reason to fight, but it's a reason. And it's not like it's Chael and Anderson where there's like this crazy heat going into it or anything like that. It's kind of fun. The human golden retriever himself just responded so perfectly with, "Hey, he should get some gel in his hair and then watch Fight Pass," or whatever. And again, there was already interest in it. And yeah, it's like this two dudes who, if they didn't had done any of this, they just booked it. Something like on a preview show, we would just like pull up Wikipedia and be like, "Oh yeah, they're just two guys and they got a couple wins and yeah, let's move on in life."
Yeah, I want to see it more than a lot of fights. So,
oh yeah, I mean, to me, this I think it'll be a Fight Pass headliner.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they put it on Big Fox as an opener. Or something.
I think it might be, but I could see it being like the Fight Pass headliner on maybe one of the big the big December show.
Yeah, could be. Well, it'll really depend on what else they've got, you know. So, changing gears here, UFC 205 still coming up, still no main event signed. All signs were kind of pointing towards it being McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez for the lightweight title, but Dana says McGregor will not be fighting Alvarez next. Dana White says a lot of things. You take that with a grain of salt. But news just broke a couple hours ago. By tomorrow morning, it'll be really old news. But Eddie Alvarez was sent about agreement to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov at 205, but he did not sign it. Khabib wants the fight, but Alvarez wants McGregor, which is understandable, you know, from a money perspective and a matchup perspective. For Alvarez, McGregor's the better fight, I think, all around, most likely. So still no main event, but it's looking more likely it'll be Alvarez and Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, Dana White kind of first announced it on Twitter in the weirdest way possible, just to say, no, that's not going to happen. Then he added, or whatever, you tagged Team Khabib. I'm like, that's how you're going to announce one of the biggest fights for your one of your biggest shows ever? That's a little odd. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It's fine as, like, being on the card and, I'll say, the Frankie Edgar, Jose Aldo position like they were in UFC 200. But, you know, it's, that ain't your main event. That ain't even close to your main event. That would be downright insulting as a main event for Madison Square Garden. Like, it's like, it could be, it has a real potential to be boring as hell. Just no. And here's the thing, it could get weirdly political too. Like, having the Muslim dude, the foreign Muslim guy, fighting in New York City, right down the street from 9/11, or I don't know if it's down the street, really, but it's just, it's Khabib. I mean, he's fine. He's a really good fighter, but he's the modern day Matt Hughes, and whatever. If they want to fight, so be it. I think that means that you just have to do Conor and Jose, or maybe John Jones and Stipe. I don't know. You need something really big, and
yeah,
and they're really close. Like, they're close enough now that really big has to be known, because really big, like, if it's George St. Pierre, there, he's going to need that time in advance to be properly trained. And if it's anybody,
there's not enough time now. I mean, there was word that McGregor's leg was screwed up coming off that Diaz fight, so I don't know if that relates to it, but I think they got to get McGregor in there, and I still think Alvarez is the fight to make. I don't know what's holding it up. I saw some stuff out there that McGregor wasn't willing to give up the featherweight title, and they wanted him to give it up if he wasn't going to defend it next. Because I think Dana even said that at one point, but it's like, does it really matter? If, like, work that shit out and get him in there.
Yeah, plus you diminish the value of the fight. The value in the fight is not Conor winning the lightweight title. That's something. It's, can Conor become the first man to ever hold two titles at the same time?
Right.
Like, that's historic.
Right.
And that's a big deal, and I mean, if he's hurt, he's hurt. That's just life. But right. You know, then there's some talk that Ronda might fight Amanda Nunes in December. Well, if she's good to go in December, I mean, I know it's an entire month difference, but you couldn't get her for November? You just, I don't know.
Yeah, the whole thing's weird. The whole thing's weird. Because literally we're, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks out, no main event, really no card to speak of. I mean, I think the only thing that's truly official is Rashad and the Army guy.
Is that official?
I could be wrong.
Cerrone and Gastelum is basically official.
Yeah, yeah, which wasn't even supposed to be the fight. Hang on, let's see.
If they fuck up this card.
Well, Okay, four fight. Okay, this is on Fox News, on Fox Sports, so this should be pretty accurate. They're saying Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stevens is confirmed. Cerrone
Castellan. That must have just come down.
Yeah, I think it did. Tim Kennedy and Rashad. Yeah. Tim Bosch and Rafael Natal. And Liz Carmouche versus Caitlin Chukagian. Yikes.
What the fuck?
They've got five fights announced, and none of them really matter.
You're going to have Cerrone get... Tim Bosch is going to fight it in Madison Square Garden? Tim Bosch? Yeah,
Maine's close to New York. What the hell?
Yeah, they have a show like a couple weeks later in Albany.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's where you should be fighting.
Mm.
Maybe they're getting things confused because, Tim Bosch doesn't fight in Madison Square Garden. Like, you
wouldn't think so.
I mean, at the very least, get Cormier and Johnson. I bet they'd be ready.
Johnson wants the fight. Cormier says he's not ready till December. They've been going back on Twitter for weeks. If they offered him, a couple hundred grand more, maybe he'd do it. But I think I saw something. He's supposed to be one of the play-by-play guys at 205. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked here. Either way, 205 is not shaping up just yet. And it has to. It's 6 weeks out. I mean, they've only got five fights signed.
You know what? They've got something. I mean, they pulled Anderson Silva out of a hat for 200 on 24 hours notice. They'll get something.
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there right now who don't have a fight signed. And maybe they know something. You hate to speculate, and it's just guessing, but who knows what John Jones' suspension is going to be? Who knows what Brock's suspension is going to be? Who knows how all that's going to shake out? And maybe they're just kind of biding their time and know something we don't know.
I would suspect that Brock's suspension is more likely to be firm than Jones's.
Right.
But
you just never know is all I'm saying.
And they always just do have I can't say they have a trump card in George St. Pierre because the stupid Reebok thing is going to bite them in the ass, but there's a way to offer enough money.
Absolutely.
And you just do George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva and nothing else matters. That's it. Yeah. You just do that and that's a fight and they have me fight CM Punk on the undercard. Or maybe, maybe those desperate say, fuck it, Punk, you want to fight in Madison Square Garden? Yeah, you can fight the guy that got beat by Mickey Gall. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't be surprised if GSP's first fight back is McGregor. I still would not be surprised to see that, but who knows when, if, and where all the cards will fall into place. What else? It was also announced that Alexander Gustafsson will fight Little Nog in Sao Paulo, Brazil on November 19th. It's actually going to be UFC Fight Night 100 on the same day as UFC Fight Night 99 from Ireland, also on the same day as a Bellator show. November 19th is going to be a long day if you plan on watching all those shows and covering them.
Did they announce Woodley and Wonderboy for 205?
I had heard that, but it's not on this Fox Sports thing.
In the back of my mind, I put that up. But anyways, more fights. Gustafsson.
Okay, here's something, though. The UFC is expected to announce the full card on Tuesday, September 27th at 6 p.m. There's going to be a press conference at MSG with Dana White in attendance. So next Tuesday, we should probably have most of the answers.
Perfect.
Unless Ariel leaks it a day or a few minutes early, then we'll know sooner. Maybe we'll know at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, September 27th.
I'm now trying to think, who can I contact and find something out?
Just November 19th. Sleep a lot on the 18th, because that's going to be a long, long day.
Is that all? And that's going to be a big Bellator show, too, because it's going to be on a Saturday.
Yeah, I think...
That's going to be a tentpole show.
It might be Benson and Chandler.
Huh. And I can see Rory fighting. I can see that being his debut.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Chael. they're gonna, you know, they go all out for those tentpole shows.
Yeah, it might be for naught though, going up against a UFC show. It's almost like you'd want to save Chael for another week when you're not splitting the audience. But
there's always a UFC show.
True. True. Yeah.
And it's not like it's not like Nogueira and Gustafsson is some giant draw.
Yeah, I wonder if they'd be better off going up against a pay-per-view though, some not high-level pay-per-view, you know, with like Demetrius Johnson in the main event or something, as opposed to going against a free UFC show.
Yeah, I think that just going up against free stuff plays well because people can flip back and forth.
Sure.
And the way that they measure those ratings a lot of times is like if you watch like so many minutes in an hour, it gets counted. So I think that there's a way that sometimes people can be double counted. And plus, if you order a pay-per-view, you're not going to turn the pay-per-view off and watch a free show and risk missing anything on the pay-per-view. Whereas if it's both free shows, you might go, hey, this Bellator show is better than the UFC right now. I'm going to stick with it. And you won't do that if you shelled out $60 for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, absolutely.
The psychology of a fight fan.
It's a scary place to go to. As far as this weekend goes, just one show on September 24th, which is this Saturday. This is from Brasilia, Brazil, which is one of my favorite names for a city in the world. Where is it? It's at some gym. It's called Nelson Ginásio. Not real familiar with that place. Never been there, but it is headlined
You haven't been there in all of your Brazilian travels?
No, I don't get out much. I have a hard time getting out of Cape Cod, but woe is me. What a tough life I lead. In the main event, we've got Lady Cyborg, Christiane Justino, fighting Lena Landsberg at 140 pounds.
Maybe.
There's a lot of issues here. I don't know how much we've talked about Cyborg here, but
we haven't. It's all broken the past couple of days.
So she's claiming, like, literally 4 days out that she's at 165 pounds and has to cut 25 pounds. There's video out with her, I can't think of the guy's name right now, her nutrition coach. George Lockhart. Who's one of the bigger names out there, along with Mike Dolce, with helping people cut weight and get down in time for the weigh-ins. He's talking to her about taking birth control, and she doesn't want to do it, and somehow that's supposed to help her, you know, with the weight cut. I don't know the science behind it. It doesn't sound like either of them knew the science behind it. He's not a doctor and probably shouldn't be encouraging people to take birth control. But that's just my opinion.
No, I heard the same. When I heard that, like, my first immediate thought was, that's the last thing you take. I mean, it's just common knowledge. You ask any woman in the world, you get on birth control, they all retain water. They bloat. It's just a natural side effect of birth control, because birth control tricks your body into thinking that you're pregnant already, so you don't release the eggs to be fertilized, but part of being pregnant is your body retains water for the baby, because babies need water, I guess. So it's like a lot of them will go on IUDs or some. I actually brought that up with Angela KGB Lee when I did the interview, and I flat asked her. I'm like, you know, is there an issue because for certain times of the month for a woman? Women will retain more water and be more bloated when they're having their menstruation or period. And she's like, well, I use an IUD, so I don't have to worry about that. I mean, when you have an athlete like Cyborg, who has a long history of difficulties making weight, and if you made it once before, just keep doing it. And she's flat saying, I don't like this. I don't know how it goes, but I'm just going to trust my coach. I'm hoping there's like a loss in translation deal there, because otherwise that's a really weird thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, to me the whole thing's crazy, because they're making this 140-pound like catchweight fight, but it's not even a real division. Why not just let her fight at 145?
Yeah, it, like it's
what? Let her fight at 155. Like, what's the difference between 140, 145, and 155? None of them even exist.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point was for her to fight at 140 a couple times and actually gradually reduce her body mass, but she doesn't seem to be doing that.
Right. I mean, even with that last weight cut, it was like there's videos and they made like a mini documentary. She's like crying and trying to get out the last couple of pounds of sweat, and it's like, it was almost like they made that video to get some sympathy for her and show how hard it is and how she can't make 135 and that it's impossible.
And that stuff's all overblown.
I know, but I'm just saying that's the perception, and it was made to do that. I'm not saying I buy it. Like, when she weighed in at 139, I didn't think she looked ridiculously drawn or small. She still had some muscle and meat on her body. I've seen a lot of other guys. Conor McGregor looks worse weighing in at 145 than she does at 139.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
It's weird because, I mean, 25 pounds the week, first of all, Judge Nowitzki's looking into it because the new regulations state that you have to be within 8% of your body weight your fighting weight, and she's currently at 13%, so they have to monitor her closely. 25 pounds is a lot.
Especially at that weight. I mean, that's a huge percentage. It's not like you're a light heavyweight cutting 25 pounds.
I'm trying to think. I think I did 20 pounds in a week, and I think I was about maybe 18, 20, because I think I competed in a Naga on a Saturday, and I think that Monday I competed at 150, believe it or not. And I think that I woke up that day, that Monday at like 169 or so. And I knew that, and I cut about, I just kind of exercised and lost about 3 or 4 pounds just through exercising. And then I sweat out 15. And that's 20. I mean, sweating out 15 is really not that difficult. Yes, the less you do, the better. But 25, and again, a lot of people have done it. It can be done. But I think, again, the smaller you are, being a woman, it probably is. I don't know if it's different. I know it's different. I just don't know if it's harder or easier. There could be some of the idea that on birth control, because she's retaining excess water, that she's actually just – her real weight is not what it says. She just has more water to get out. But sweating out the water, if you have excess water to sweat, that doesn't harm you at all. It's only when you get to the water that you need – that last little bit of water in your brain, when you start getting rid of that, that's when you have a problem. But if she's basically in a state of hyperhydration right now, maybe it all comes off easy.
Yeah, I mean, do you think her mentality is make it seem really, really hard to get down to 140 so they won't push to get me down to 135? Maybe they'll do you think they would create a 145 division for her? I mean,
I don't think she thinks that strategically. She's a very nice girl, but I don't think she's that smart.
Yeah. I mean, long term, what do you see happening here?
Long term, I think they create 25 before they do 45. There's just, I mean, you look at the competition at 45 or 40.
No, I agree with that, but I'm more talking about what's going to happen with Cyborg.
I think if
she just finishes her career in Invicta, I mean, what the hell?
I think that if there's a plan from her side, I think it might be, I'm going to fight at 140 when I'm in the UFC to show that I can make the catch weight for Ronda. And then it kind of puts a little bit of pressure on Ronda, and Dana's already kind of starting to stoke that fire a little. So, I mean, personally, yeah, I think what they should do is just have her defend the Invicta Championship on their show. It would raise a profile of Invicta, which is under their Fight Pass banner. It would be healthier for her, and why not? You know, if she's because 140 is not a weight class. Stop doing these stupid ass non-weight classes.
Yeah, it's silly.
Like, that's
silly.
Like, I always hated it in boxing. I don't like catch weight choke fights. Just, these are the weight classes, just fight in them.
Right. It's weird. I mean, I think the initial plan was to keep moving her down in weight, but I don't think she's either able or willing, one or the other. So anyway, I'm assuming we're both picking Cyborg to beat Lena Landsberg.
Oh, she's gonna murder her. Yeah. I was watching some of Lena there. She's a grappler, and Cyborg's a part man. Just, that's it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I didn't look at the odds. I bet they're fairly long, though. In the co-main, probably one of the weirder fights I've seen in a long time. Henin Barral is fighting Philippe Nover, a.k.a. the Nurse from Ultimate Fighter years ago. Nover's kind of bounced around all over the place. He fought in Bellator. He got cut from the UFC. Dana White at one point called him the next Anderson Silva. Mm. He has not been the next Anderson Silva by any stretch. Currently, he's 11-6, coming off a loss to Zubera Tukagov, whoever that is, back in December 2015. I mean, Barao's obviously the favorite in that fight, even though Barao's, I think he's coming off that loss to Jeremy Stevens. Any thoughts on that fight?
I think stylistically they match up pretty well. They tend to be well-rounded guys that primarily strike. Barao, probably a little bit better on the ground. Novar, I think he's much naturally bigger. That said, Barao does have those freaky gorilla limbs. I'm still in the mindset of Henin Barao being a really good, exciting fighter, even though he's lost his last three, or, well, three of his last four, I guess it would be, or something. He may just be done. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he lost the fire. He looked okay at 45. I mean, Jeremy Stevens is no joke. I mean, Jeremy Stevens, he murders people. He blasts their dudes, and Barao hung tough with them. Barao, look at that. If he ain't beating Felipe Novar, he ain't long for the featherweight division.
No. No. Also on this card, there's not a lot of huge fights. The other two biggest names probably is a Roy Nelson versus Bigfoot Silva fight. You know, two guys have been in the heavyweight division for a long time now. More, you know, bottom top 10, maybe even 15 now. You know, if I had a guess, Nelson will probably catch Bigfoot with a big punch.
Yeah, that's... I consider that a pretty safe bet. Post-growth hormone, Bigfoot doesn't have a chin. Roy does. Roy hits hard. And it's not like this is really going to go to the ground. And even if it did, it would still favor Roy. So this one's it just screams classic, ugly knockout.
Yeah, or it could be kind of dull, too. Who knows if they're both cautious and don't want to get hit. Roy, I mean, a lot of people aren't talking about it, but Roy is 2-6 in his last eight. He's hit a rough patch for sure, and he's getting older. I think he's 40 now, so we'll see. Two old heavyweights. Other than that, on the undercard, anything catching your eye? Any fights forward?
Trinaldo and Paul Felder style is always just kind of entertaining to look at. Mike De La Torre versus Godofredo Pepe. Pepe is a very aggressive fighter. Michinori Tanahaka versus Hanayaya. Anytime Hanayaya fights, I get very excited. I mean, if people think that Damian Maya just tries to do pure jiu-jitsu, they haven't watched Hanayaya in there. And then, speaking of great jiu-jitsu... Yep. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to say Gilbert Burns is fighting on the undercard, too. Another...
world-class,
you know, high-level jiu-jitsu guy.
And another one also, Nusir Formiga versus Dustin Ortiz. That could be a really good fight because Ortiz is a scrapper who is really, really talented. And Formiga is, you know, formerly for many years, Formiga was the number one flyweight in the world until everybody realized that the UFC had a bunch of dudes at 135 that were really flyweights. And but he's right. I mean, he's right up there. He's
ranked fifth right now.
Yeah.
And Ortiz is ranked 10th. So yeah, no, two top flyweights for sure.
Yeah, and I mean the rest. Eric Silva's fighting against Luan Chagas. Chagas, I don't know what the fuck that is. Sounds kind
short
of
short. I think he got in there short notice.
I feel like that's a. When I hear that name, it feels like it's Venezuelan, and I only say that probably because I've watched Narcos, but I don't know. This is how I pick these things. So, yeah, actually, it's not a bad card overall. It's better than Germany. It's really the new standard in life.
I would hope so. Well, we'll have to wait and see how the show pans out. Other than that, that's all I got. And did we miss anything?
If we did, I don't know. And that's good enough for me. So, yeah, everybody, we didn't go crazy long. I can get some sleep maybe as I watch a dog chew on a bone now and another dog watch him chew that bone. And he is looking at him with eyes of intention to do violence if he can get a chance. So, before that all happens, everybody, thanks for listening to the show here, as always hosted by Matt Grady. I'm going to come up with a new name for Grady's show, so it'll be like Grady's Good Times or something. I don't know, I'll figure out something better than that. And then Matt will say goodbye to all of you, so I'll say au revoir, and Matt, take us away.
Thanks so much for listening, and we should be back next week, same time, same place.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay.